Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and James Forsyth. So we've just had the news today that two Russian nationals have been named as suspects in the attempted murder of former Russian spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia. Speaking in the Commons, Theresa May said the government had concluded from intelligence provided by UK agencies that the men were part of the GRU intelligence service. So James, how does this change the diplomatic picture?
I think it escalates things because this removes any ambiguity that there had been about this operation, which is, you know, the UK government, the UK police are saying that they believe they know who did this, and the UK intelligence service are, we think that these men are officers of Russian military intelligence. Given the nature of that organisation, this was Theresa May's kind of main point in the Commons, you can't think that this is some kind of Thomas a Becket who'll rid me of this troublesome priest moment, that this must have been ordered from the top of the Russian government. And obviously, ordering an assassination on British soil, using a nerve agent that tragically has harmed people other than a target, is about as serious as things get in international relations, other than a full-on declaration of war.
Now, Isabel, it's always been the government line from a very early stage that this was something that they were blaming on the Russian state. And various people have suggested that wasn't the case, or at least cast doubt on that theory, one such person being Jeremy Corbyn. How did the Labour leader respond to Theresa May's statement today?
His response was much more conciliatory this afternoon, and he did basically say that Labour would support a proportionate response from the government. Now, it's sort of difficult to say what's proportionate and what isn't, given the government's not giving any details on what their response would be, and whether they've actually already taken some responses. That's all top secret. But after Jeremy Corbyn's response, Jeremy Corbyn's spokesman was suggesting that a lot of this will be about financial sanctions, and that's where the party's focus is. So it is a shift in stance from Labour, because previously, as you said, Katie, Jeremy Corbyn was asking for, at one stage, he was asking for a sample of the nerve agent to be sent to Russia so that the Russians could check it was theirs, which was a nice idea. And he was also basically telling the government to slow down and to hold back until it was confirmed by the OPCW that this was Russian Novichok. And there were suggestions from his spokesman again that intelligence might be being misused, as was the case in the build-up to the Iraq war. So today, Jeremy Corbyn's spokesman was saying that actually Corbyn has always suggested that there was indirect or direct involvement from the Russians, which is proving a little bit more difficult for us to pin down when he said that back in March, when the Salisbury attack statements happened in the House of Commons. I've just been through the Hansard and I can't find Corbyn saying that, so there must be a clip somewhere where the Labour leader said that, but he certainly didn't broadcast it as widely as his spokesman is suggesting.
James, when it comes to the options that the UK government has on the table in responding, we've already had quite tough sanctions. We've already had sanctions by our allies, America particularly. Oh. What more can they really do?
We've already had the expulsion of Russian diplomats believed to be associated with Russian intelligence. So I think we are now into kind of proper John le Carré realms in terms of what the response is. You know, what does the UK know about the GRU that it feels that it can act on in these circumstances? So I think we wait to see what the UK government does. I thought that Theresa May was slightly implying in the statement that the UK government had already responded, but there were no details given of that. And I think this might be one of these things that we wait for some time and then this. I don't think this is going to be announced to Parliament, as in we have done this in response.
This was one of the things that came up after the statement in the huddle with the Prime Minister's spokesman. He was asked whether the GRU had actually already been dismantled on British soil, and so whether the action against the GRU that the Prime Minister was talking about today would be something that would take place overseas. And he wouldn't talk about the latter, but he did confirm that the UK had degraded the GRU's capacity on UK soil.
Now, before we had that statement, we had Prime Minister's Questions, which was our first since the long summer recess. And on paper, it seemed like it would be quite a difficult one for the Prime Minister, what with the fact both sides of her party seem to hate her Brexit plan and many want her long gone. Instead, Corbyn went on Brexit and she seemed to get through it okay, didn't she, James?
Yeah, and I think you also saw a kind of a foreshadowing of the Tory strategy for the autumn, which is she went for Jeremy Corbyn much more directly than I think she had in previous months, you know, trying to basically directly tie him to Labour anti-Semitism, to link his comments about sense of irony that he made to this whole scandal, you know, saying that he's trying to change his party so that there is a home for anti-Semites in it and all this stuff. And I think that, you know, this is one of the kind of Theresa May number 10's last rolls of the dice, is to try and escalate this personal combat between May and Corbyn in the belief that whatever her flaws, she comes out ahead of him.
Isabel, on the subject of Brexit, we had lots of questions for Theresa May, but the SNP leader, Ian Blackford, he went in on something Justine Greening has said earlier this week, where she compared Theresa May's Chequers proposal to the poll tax and said actually it was even less popular than Thatcher's poll tax. He tried to suggest that this is going to be another example of Scotland bearing the brunt. Do you think this is a fair comparison, or a comparison that's going to have much effect on the public mood?
It's a slightly odd comparison from Justine Greening, and lots of people have pointed out that there haven't exactly been riots on the streets of Brixton as a result of Brexit, no matter how many people stand outside Parliament shouting "Stop Brexit" on the hour. This seems to happen quite a lot at the moment. It's not quite the same as the civil disobedience that we saw when the poll tax was introduced. But you can understand why Ian Blackford would want to pursue this line of something being done to Scotland against its wishes. The problem for the Prime Minister is that even if her critics are using quite ludicrous analogies, such as the poll tax, she doesn't have very many supporters. She doesn't have ministers going out there saying, well, I, for one, think Chequers is excellent. I mean, the last person who really did that, as we've discussed on previous podcasts, was Michael Gove straight after the Chequers summit. And since then, quite a few people have resigned.
Yes, James. In fact, the only thing that Theresa May really seems to want to say about Brexit is that she doesn't back a second referendum. I think that maybe that's what most people in her party can at least agree on. We saw today at PMQ she tried to turn the tables on Jeremy Corbyn. When he went on the attack about her Brexit plans, she responded by saying, can you now commit to the fact that you don't back a second vote? What do you think she was getting at there?
I think you are right. This is the kind of thing that her party can rely on. And I mean, the threat she hopes to make to her Eurosceptic backbenchers at the end is, look, if you don't vote through my deal, there could be a second referendum and there could be no Brexit. So it's my Brexit or no Brexit. I think one of her problems is this, is, you know, I was discussing this with a cabinet minister the other day, which is the whole case made for Chequers in that meeting, you know, behind closed doors. And interestingly, only the formal bit of that meeting is minuted, all the rest of it is not, was this is a negotiable deal, we can get this deal done. That left those cabinet ministers, especially those cabinet ministers who aren't kind of intimately involved in the negotiations, with a sense that there would have been some more progress by now. And the problem they're getting is that, you know, as this cabinet minister is pointing out, that, you know, if the best that number 10 can do is point to some mild, lukewarm words from the Polish foreign minister as proof that this deal is deliverable, when you've got Michel Barnier describing it as insane and unpicking the entire European legal order, close allies of Emmanuel Macron coming on British radio to say no can do, that doesn't work. And this is the problem, which is the whole case for Chequers is it's deliverable. So until you can prove that it's deliverable, it becomes an orphan.
Now, finally, back on the domestic front, there does seem to be some talk of domestic policies, even if it is negative talk. There's a story today that the Treasury and Number 10 are both trying to veto plans for three-year tenancies and contracts, and that came up too at PMQs when a Labour MP asked Theresa May about it. Isabel, what do you think is going on here? Because there did seem to be a point when the Conservative Party and the government accepted the need to improve the offer to renters.
Well, there does seem to be a lot of nervousness from the Treasury about all sorts of regulation at the moment, not just on longer-term tenancies, but also on calorie counts in restaurants and so on. And a lot of those things are being pinned quite squarely at Liz Truss's door, because she has complained in public about the government telling people what to do too much. And she cited Michael Gove as an example there, but she's clearly looking at other departments as well in this. I think it's damaging for the Conservatives that The Sun is so angry about this and had in their leading article today a warning that this would be something that would cost the Conservatives the next election.
I think there's two things going on here. One thing that should worry number 10 is James Brokenshaw is about as close to, you know, is as close to a Theresa May Lawless as you can get in the cabinet. You know, him and Karen Bradley are the two. The fact that his department is kicking off a stink about this, I mean, shows that they've miscalculated. And I think the second thing is this, is there's miscalculation going on here, right? Which is, there is a tendency for government to spew out too much stuff. I mean, the calorie count is a classic example of this. There is a massive difference between telling McDonald's or Pizza Express to put calorie counts on their dishes while telling some small restaurant that has its own menu every day that they need to do it. But the tenancies thing, it's understanding the uncertainty that this creates. Look, in the long term, the Tories obviously have to revive the property-owning democracy. But in the short term, the fact you've got families with children in school and all this stuff suddenly finding that they don't know where they're going to be because the landlord is up sticks on them after 12 months. You know, that is not sensible. They do need to deal with this problem.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And if you like this podcast, please do remember to subscribe and perhaps even review us on the iTunes store. And do join us again tomorrow for the next episode.